Genesis 18 is where we're going to begin tonight. And I want to look at a passage, especially that relates to Abraham. This is about Abraham and when some messengers came to Abraham and delivered at least two pretty important messages. Let's begin reading in verse 1 of chapter 18. Then the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, "My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that you may pass by. Inasmuch as you have come to your servant," they said, "do as you have said." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quickly, make ready three measures of fine meal. Knead it and make cakes." And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. So he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree as they ate. The text tells us that the Lord appeared to Abraham. It tells us three men appeared to Abraham. I don't know what to make out of all of that. Very probably these were angels who appeared. It may have been, some would say, that even the Lord appeared with them in some way. That's after our classes that Frank has taught us on Wednesday night. A lot of different thoughts have run through my mind about what maybe that could possibly be, even thoughts that maybe I haven't had before these lessons. But it's interesting that these men, as it states, come, and they are telling Abraham at least two very important things. First of all, they're going to tell him that he and Sarah are going to have a son, and you remember that story very well. Because of their ages, they couldn't believe that. She was past childbearing years, but yet there was going to be a son of promise that was going to be given. So the angels were going to tell him about that, and did. And also that Sodom would be destroyed. And of course, we know that the story is recorded for us later in this same book, that certainly would take place. But one of the things that we don't talk about as much about what happened here is that Abraham and Sarah showed these men great hospitality. There was evidently some foot washing that took place. That was a way to relax those guests who were in your home. And if you go back and look at the text, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, give them some water and let them be on their way. I mean, there was bread, there was meat, they killed a calf. Abraham did what I would do. He would go into the kitchen and say, "Sarah," or in my case, "Beth, do something quickly, please." And that's kind of what happened here. And Abraham wanted to, and no doubt Sarah did too. She wanted to help show hospitality to these men. So a meal was made. If you go to Genesis 19 and look at the first three verses, you see something similar that happened when the text tells us, "Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom, and when Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, 'Hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night, and wash your feet, then you may rise early and go on your way.' And they said, 'No, but we will spend the night in the open square.' But he insisted strongly," verse 3 says, "so they turned into him and entered his house. And then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate." Again, it doesn't sound like that he just offered them a cup of water and said, "Be on your way." There was something very similar about these circumstances found in chapters 18 and 19. Then turn over to 2 Kings, the 4th chapter. I want you to look at and be reminded again of another story that I think is probably familiar to you. At least the characters of the story are familiar to you. And by us reading it, it may recall some things to you about the particular incident. Look at 2 Kings, the 4th chapter, and let's begin reading particularly in verse 8. 2 Kings 4 and verse 8. "Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman. and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand, so it will be whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there." Those are stories that we may kind of pass over when we look at the text. But I think these stories are filled with meaning because it shows an attitude of heart of people who are gladly having people into their home. They are making preparations for that. It's kind of amazing that this Shunammite woman did what she did for Elisha. This was not a one-time event. I mean, she made some arrangements in her abode so that when he came by, he ate with her. And evidently, he would stay in the house, as was common many times, but there was a lot that was being done for this man of God, as she would call, or as the text would call him. I have been privileged in my lifetime to go different places and stay with people who are interested in taking care of the preacher, so to speak. I have been a part of that most of my life, since my father has been a preacher all of his life as well. So even as a young boy, I was privileged to go into the homes and watch men and women as they prepared meals and as they made ready places for us to be. And some of the greatest memories of my life are of people. When I was a very young boy, one of the first, the absolute first place that I remember my mom and dad going where my dad was preaching was a little town not far from ours called Augusta. And there was a lady there who made the best coconut cake I believe I've ever eaten in my life. And whenever we would be asked to go to Miss Molly's for Sunday dinner, I thought that was going to be the greatest thing. I can't remember what Dad preached about as a four-year-old, but I remember that coconut cake was really good. But it was a lady who didn't have much, but she would ask us into her home on a regular basis. I can remember going other places where that would happen as well. I have taken advantage of opportunities, and I hope to mean that in a very good way, because of people opening up their home, and such is the case even today when I travel, and I'm appreciative of that. But this woman showed great care for Elisha. She did that because I think she wanted to. Blake read from Hebrews, the 13th chapter, verses 1 through 3. And I'm not going to go back and read that. I appreciate him reading that tonight for us. But it's very probable that the idea that the Hebrew writer had was referring back to at least Genesis 18 and possibly 19, when Abraham did what he did and Sarah did what she did and Lot did what they did. So it's very probable that he's referring to that. He talks about the love that people ought to have for each other. And then very quickly, he talked about this issue of hospitality and why that was important for them to be a part of that. Look at Matthew, the 25th chapter. This is a passage that I've referred to over the past week. Matthew 25, these are passages we have not read, but I want to read them tonight in reference to the final judgment, it seems to me. And these are statements that are made beginning in verse 25 by our Lord as he asked people to think about what's going to happen when judgment comes. Verse 35 of Matthew 25 says, "For I was hungry." These are Jesus' words. "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" Answer and say to them, "Assuredly I say to you that inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me also." It just seems to me that what Jesus is saying is that there are ways in which we serve each other. There's so much to do in the kingdom of God. There's times to give people drink. There's times to give people food. There's times to visit the sick. There's time to do a multitude of things when people are destitute. There are multiple times to have opportunity to do those things. And so it seems to me that Jesus is saying, when you have the opportunity to do these things, that's what you need to do. And this aspect of sharing it seems, had some pretty major judgment concerns. I mean, Jesus talks about that. When the final judgment comes, Jesus is saying, when you do these things, it's as if you're doing these things to me. And it's important for you to understand that. I think at least that's the way that I seem to read that, because he's saying that is important. And as I said to you, I've been the recipient of these kind of things. I've been the recipient of these kind of things here. This is a great group. All of you have been so kind and so generous to Beth and me since we've been here. And so we've been the recipient of this kind of hospitality. And I want to commend you for it. This lesson is not in hopes of trying to create something, because I think much of what I'm talking about tonight is so prevalent here, and I think it's a great advantage for us. And I want to commend you for it. That's really the point of this lesson tonight, is really a commendation to say to you how much we appreciate that, and how much I think we're going to see maybe how important it is for all of us to not only continue to maintain that, but maybe to increase that as we can. So I want to commend you for that. You know, when you think about the word hospitality, what word comes to your mind? Hospital, doesn't it? Well, how do you put that hospital idea and hospitality together? I thought about that. And as I looked at the etymology of those words, there are a lot of words that come from the same background. And I'm not going to take the time to try to pull all that together. I'm not sure I could. There's always an idea that connects all of those. It really, the word hostel and the word hospice and the word hospital and the word hospital, all those words have some connections. That's interesting about that, isn't it? Because we hear all those words and we might not put them together. But here's the phrase that puts many of those things together. There is a need. There is a need that is being met. So when we get to a passage like Acts, the second chapter, when the first congregation of God's people came together, when those people began to obey the gospel, we're not surprised when we hear in verse 46, when we hear this, "So continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart." When we think about the idea of being hospitable, and when we think about the idea of providing that kind of need, we're not surprised. I don't think any of us would ever be surprised that what happened in Acts 2 is indicated that this is what happened. They came together with simplicity of heart. They wanted to be together. That was a very much a part of what they wanted to do. That's how they encouraged each other. So they wanted to be together. When you get to Acts 16, you remember when Lydia had obeyed the gospel, she asked Paul and his company to stay after her conversion. She said, "I want you to come and I want you to stay at my house." And evidently that took place as well. So what I want you to think about tonight, and I want you to think about this, not because you haven't, but just to reinforce what I think you're already so good at, is that hospitality is a very natural thing for a Christian. It's the idea of wanting to be together. It's an attitude of heart. Romans 12 and verse 13 says, if you remember the litany of things that Paul would identify in Romans 12, where he talks about all these things that are going to be done. And in verse 13 he says, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. What's interesting to me about Romans 12 is he's not talking to a particular group of people, not in that second scene. He's talking to all those who would profess faith in God. And he's saying, you know, what Christians do is they look out for each other's needs. I think he's talking about every kind of need that a Christian would have there. And he says, you're given to hospitality. You are people that look out for needs. Those two phrases there really coincide. They say some of the same things. You remember 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. Shepherds, when Paul writes in Titus and in Timothy, he talks about the qualifications of shepherds. He says, one of the things that they're to be is hospitable. That's a great and daunting task. You know, when you look at the qualifications of an elder, and when I look at those qualifications, I don't think that's a checklist. I think what Paul is trying to say is, this is the kind of man that you're looking for. I'm not suggesting that we don't need to look at each of those qualifications and in some way see if they're manifested in the life of a man, but I think he's pointing out the fact that this is the kind of man we're talking about. And one of the things that are given in those qualifications is that they are to be hospitable. It is a daunting task, I think, to be a shepherd, to be a servant, to be a leader among God's people. takes a lot. You know, when Paul would say, you know, you need to desire the office. Boy, I think that's exactly right. Because when you look at those qualifications, a man who has been asked to serve or is being considered to serve, he looks at those and he's thinking, you know, this is a major thing here. This is something that's going to require a lot out of me. And I think in most cases, in every case, what we need to look for is continue to look for men who are already providing these kind of things in their lives. It's not to say, we hope he can be a good elder, let's hope he can do these things. No, we're looking for men who are able to do that, who are capable of doing those kind of things. And one of those things is providing this kind of hospitality. It's what they do. Elders lead. They lead not only in that area, but they lead in all areas. And so that makes it a very daunting task for men who serve in this capacity. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10, you remember when he's talking about the widows there, and he's talking about those widows who need to be supported. And part of what he asks us, he says, listen and think about the lives of these widows before they became widows. Were they given to hospitality? The lives of these women were to be taken into account. And part of the consideration as to whether or not the church would support them was, if they didn't have family, part of the consideration was, have they been hospitable? Have they shared what they have? And I think that's a great way to serve. You know, you may say, well, I don't know exactly what I can do in the service of God. Well, you can be hospitable. You can share what you have. You can distribute to the needs of the saints, and you can be given hospitality. You can show yourself to be that. And among those who were being considered to be on the roll for as a needy widow were those who had to have fulfilled that obligation. That's what they were looking for. Is this the kind of woman that she was? So I think that's important. So let me just very quickly, let me just ask you to think about a few things. These are some reasons, I think, why we need to keep on keeping on. And again, I would say, I would highly commend you, for what you do. As I was thinking about this lesson, I thought about all the folks among this group who have befriended Beth and me since we've been here. And all of you have done that to one degree or another. Some of you have had us into your home. Some of us we've been with you in other places socially. But we've gotten together. And I think that's part of what Paul, I think that's very much what Paul is trying to say here. Remember, those things are important. So let me offer just a few reasons why it's important for us to keep on keeping on, especially as it relates to this idea of hospitality. Number one, we choose our associates. We choose our associates. I would just say this to you. If you're a Christian and your closest friends aren't, I would encourage you to look strongly at that. Because we choose our associates. You remember the passage that we always talk about? Many times we put it in the context of young people, but evil companions, 1 Corinthians 15:33, evil companions corrupt good morals. That principle is so prevalent in so many aspects of our lives. But it's prevalent not just for young people. I think it's prevalent for those of us who are older as well. We can choose when we entertain people, and when I talk about, I'm talking about when we look to share the needs of other people. When we do that, we are looking out for others, and we are allowed to choose our associates. And I choose you. I mean, much of my time outside of this particular building, outside of our worship periods, much of my time is spent trying to associate myself with you. There's a reason for that, because I want to choose you. I want you to feel like you want to choose me. That's the nature of who we are. It's the nature of us being together. You make me better. You encourage me. And we do that, certainly we do that while we're here. But think about what we can do with each other when we share this idea of hospitality and when we engage, as we do many times. But think about what we can do with each other. This past week, for a couple of days, Beth and I went with Kyle and Deidre to Little Rock. Ken and Marianne met us there. They were with Holly and Drew. But we met a couple other couples, Tim and Vicki Stevens were there. And we met another couple, Todd and Karen Dennis, who are good friends of mine and Beth. And we were all together for a day or two, just doing different things and having a good time with each other. And when we left each other, one of the things that I got two texts from two of the men, independent of each other, that said, what a great time to be together with people who are godly, who are talking about those kind of things, who are interested in those kind of things. And it was interesting that while we were together, we talked a lot about those spiritual kind of things. What I thought about was, you know, how good was that? And I wouldn't have had a better time with anybody else, I don't think, other than those people. I'm not talking about just those people, but I'm talking about the kind of people they were. What an outstanding opportunity. And the people we were with felt the same way. So it's important for us to choose the people that we associate with. I think that's very important. So that's one reason why we need to keep on doing what we're doing. Second of all, I think it sets a good example. It's important when people come and are considering coming to college. It's important that they see people who enjoy being together, who like being together. Obviously, we enjoy being together in this environment. This is obviously the most important environment. This is where our spiritual needs are met. But when you read the New Testament, there are other needs that need to be met as well. And we have opportunities to do that outside of this building together. And it's important for us to provide those opportunities. So it sets a good example for others who are interested in getting to know people better. That sets a good example for them. And then it gives us an opportunity to do more than talk about it. You know, one thing that all of us, I think, want to do better at is we think about things that we can do, that we want to do. I talk about a lot of things. I talk about wanting to do a lot of things, and sometimes Beth will say, well, why don't you just do it? Instead of talking about it. And I think that's right. And this gives us an opportunity when we are encouraged to have people in our homes, when we're encouraged to be with people, it gives us an opportunity not just to talk about it, but it gives us an opportunity to do something about that as well. And then in Romans 15, the fourth thing that I would ask you to think about, Romans 12 and verse 15 tells us that we are to rejoice with those that rejoice. We are to weep with those that weep. You know, being together allows us to do that. We do that here. When people are struggling, when people have lost a loved one, or when people are involved in things that are tragic, or when people have certain needs that are concerning them, we do that here. We talk about those things here. But we do that away from here as well, and that's important for us to remember. We weep with those that weep, as well as rejoice with those that rejoice. So that's important for us to remember. And again, that's an admonition that Paul would provide for us in Romans, the 12th chapter. And I think it's also important for our children. They see Christianity live. May I say this? And I say this quite often. I think the greatest thing that you can do for your child is live your faith. I think that is the number one thing you can do. There are a lot of things that a parent or a grandparent or someone close to a family are inclined to do. There are certain things that God would command them to do. The most important thing, I think, is to set the example for your children. To show them what it means to live faith. And I say this a lot of places where I go, I would say it to you. I think one of the tragedies that many families have today is that their children are seeing in their own parents faith that is not lived. It's not demonstrated. It's talked about. It's heard about on Sunday morning, and it's heard about on Sunday night and Wednesday night, and it's talked about in a Bible class, and it's maybe prayed about, but when it comes down to, is it being done? A lot of times it isn't. I realize that's a judgment call, but I make some observations about that. And I would just tell you that as a parent, if you're not living what you say you believe, in my judgment, you're making a terrible mistake, and it's going to come back and haunt you. Because your children want you. They know you better than anybody. And they need to see the example that you set. They need to see Christianity lived. I think it's the most important thing that a parent can do. And I would say this to you, whether my parents were here or not, but I think that's one advantage that I've had in my life. I've seen it lived. My dad preached about it for years. Continues to preach about it. But I didn't just see it preached about. I saw it lived. And I think that's been a great advantage for my sisters and me throughout my lifetime. And I would encourage all of us to continue to do it. That's something that Beth and I have talked about a lot in our lives. And I think over the past probably 10 years especially, we've come to realize that even more. And I think there are a lot of young people out there who are waiting to see parents who are genuinely serious about doing what they say they believe. And so, if what I'm saying to you tonight resonates with you as a parent. I hope that it does, but I hope that all of us will set the example for our children. I think it's important, even in this realm of hospitality, as parents, for us to set the example for our children. And then maybe the most important lesson that we can learn from all of this is that we just need to be together. We're commanded to do that. We're commanded to show this kind of hospitality toward each other and to be together. There are practical issues about that, and I'm not going to get into all that. I don't think that's necessary. I don't even know that that's the best way to use our time tonight to talk about practically. But I know there are things about that. You may be saying, we know you read all these passages about people fixing this and doing this and providing this. There's nowhere in Scripture that talks about that we have a command to do that. But what's clear from Scripture is that we do have the command to be together. If you can't provide for things like that when you have guests in your home, that's not a problem. That's not even necessary. But the point is that we do need to be together. I think this is a point that I think is well made. You know, as I travel some and in meetings and different places like that, a lot of times people, churches, as we do when men come here, we put them up in a hotel while they're with us. I can tell you from a preacher standpoint, we prefer that. At least most of the ones that I know, I prefer that because it gives us some time away, and it doesn't encroach upon maybe being in someone's home for an extended period of time and hurting them, or not hurting them, but being a part of their lives, and maybe they might get tired of us or whatever. But sometimes we like to do that. So I think that's a very good thing that we do. I don't think it's absolutely necessary, but I think it is a good time, and times sometimes change, cultures change, and what people need changes, so I appreciate it. But I will say this. A lot of times when I go, people will put me up sometimes, most of the time, probably in a hotel. But, you know, when I walk into a hotel room, as much as I appreciate the fact that I'm there and I can do what I want to do, I like the exchanges that I have when I'm in people's homes as well. You know, a nice hotel room, even a very nice hotel room, cannot offer me hospitality. They can provide me a nice bed. They can make the climate in a room just what I want. They might give me a mint at night before I go to bed, or they might offer me a few amenities that are very good, but they can't provide for me hospitality. They can't do that. They can't talk to me. They can't ask me about myself. I can't ask them about themselves. I can't really interact with them. A hotel room cannot provide that. People do that. People do that. And that's how we all build those relationships, when we're together. And so I would encourage us to do that. Let me make one final comment. The gospel, in a very real sense, is social. There's a difference between the gospel being social and the social gospel. I'm very much not interested in the social gospel. I think that's against what the Bible would teach us to do, to be involved with. But I'm very much in favor of us being social. Because that's exactly what the Bible teaches us to do. It teaches us to be together. It teaches us to encourage each other and to help each other. And so, as we think about this, let me continue to encourage you to do what you are doing. To invite people into your home. To talk to people. To invite people other places. But just basically to be with people and to be with this group of people and encourage this group of people. Because when you do, what it does, it builds those relationships. And I can promise you that from the time that we've been here, a lot of the relationships that we've built with you are because you have asked us to spend time, or we have asked you to spend time. And that becomes important for people. It is exactly what Christians should do. And I would encourage us to not only continue to do it, but to think about ways in which we continue to help people and we can continue to build those kind of relationships. Again, I hope that the lesson has been important to you. I hope that you'll just consider it and think about maybe some ways that you can continue to be effective in those areas. But thank you so much for listening. You always listen so well, and I very much appreciate it. If you have a spiritual need tonight that we can help you with, we'd love to do that. And we would ask you to come right now and let that be known as we stand and as we sing.